peasant isn't much of an insult.
Why is it not?
She asked, and she looked genuinely puzzled. Because, you're right, as far back as anyone can trace my family tree, I have nothing but soldiers and farmers. I am good peasant stock, and proud of it.
Why would you be proud of that?
Because everything we've gotten, we've made with our two hands. The sweat of our brows, that kind of thing. We've had to work for everything we have. No one has ever given us anything.
I do not understand, she said.
I don't know if I can explain it to you, I said. I was thinking it was like Asher trying to explain to me what you owed a liege lord. I had nothing in my life that prepared me to understand that sort of obligation. I didn't say that out loud, though, because I didn't want to bring up the idea that I owed Belmort anything, because I didn't feel I did.
I am not stupid, Anita. I would understand if you would explain yourself clearly.
Asher moved from behind to the other side of us, still as far as he could stay from Musette, but it was brave of him to draw attention to himself.
I attempted to explain to Anita earlier what one owes a liege lord, and she could not understand it. She is young and American. They have never had the benefit of being ruled here.
She turned her head to one side, disturbingly like a bird just before it takes a bite out of a worm.
And what has her lack of understanding of civilized ways to do with anything?
A human being would have licked their lips. Asher went still, quiet. Hold still enough and the fox won't know you're there.
You, lovely Musette, have never lived where you are not subject to a lord or lady or where you did not rule others. You have never lived without knowing the duties one owes one's liege.
Hui. She made that one word cold, so cold, as if to say, go on, dig yourself a deeper hole to be buried in.
You have never dreamt of the possibility that being a peasant, owing no one, would be a freeing experience.
She waved a carefully manicured hand as if clearing the very thought from the air.
Absurd. Freeing experience. What does that mean?
I believe, Jean-Claude said, that the fact that you do not understand what that means is Asher's exact point. She frowned at them both.
I do not understand. That it cannot be that important.
She dismissed it all with a wave of dainty hands. Then she turned her attention back to me, and it was frightening. I wasn't sure what it was about the mere gaze of those eyes, but it chilled the marrow in my bones.
Have you seen our presents to Jean-Claude and Asher?
I must have looked as confused as I felt, because she turned and tried to motion behind her, but all I could see was her very large human servant.
Angelito, Musa she may see.
Angelito? Somehow the name Little Angel didn't fit him. He moved, and she finished the motion towards the fireplace. It was only the fireplace with its painting above it, then something about the painting caught my eye. It was supposed to be a painting of Jean-Claude, Asher, and Juliana in clothing a la the Three Musketeers, but it wasn't. If there hadn't been new and strange vampires in the room, I'm sure I would have noticed it sooner. Oh, yes, I would have noticed it sooner. It was a picture of Cupid and Psyche, that traditional scene where Cupid asleep is finally revealed to the candle-wielding Psyche. Valentine's Day has robbed Cupid of what he was in the beginning. He was not a chubby, sexless baby with wings. He was a god of love. I knew who had posed for Cupid, because no one else had ever had that golden hair, that long, flawless body. I had memories of what Asher had looked like before, but I'd never seen it, not me, myself. I walked towards the painting like a flower pulled towards the sun. It was irresistible. Asher lay on his side in the painting, one hand curled against his stomach, the other hand flung outward, limp with sleep. His skin glowed golden in the candlelight, only a few shades lighter than the foam of hair that framed his face and shoulders. He was nude, but that word didn't do him justice. The candlelight made his skin glow warm from the broadening of his shoulders to the curve of his feet. His nipples were like dark halos against the swell of his chest. His stomach was flat to the grace of his belly button, as if an angel had touched that flawless skin and left a delicate imprint. A line of hair, dark gold, almost auburn, traced the edge of his stomach and ran in a line down, down to curl around him, where he lay swollen, partially erect, caught forever between sleep and passion. The curve of his hip was the most perfect few inches of skin that I had ever seen. The curve drew the eye down to the line of his thigh, the long sweep of his legs. I remember with Jean-Claude's memories what the curve of that hip had felt like under my fingertips. I remembered arguing about whose hip was the softest, the most perfect. Belle Morte had said that the lines of both their bodies were the closest to perfection she had ever seen on a man. Jean-Claude had always believed that Asher was the more beautiful, and Asher had believed the same of Jean-Claude. The artist had painted white wings on the sleeping figure, so detailed they looked as if they'd be soft if you could touch them. The wings were huge and reminded me of Renaissance pictures of angels. They seemed out of place on that golden body. Psyche was peering around the edge of one wing, so that it shielded her upper body, yet revealed a shoulder. The edge of her body, down to that first curve of hip. But most of her was lost behind Cupid's body. I frowned up at the picture. I knew that shoulder, the curve of the ribs under that white skin. Though traced with golden candlelight, I knew the line of that body. I expected Psyche to be Belle Morte. I'd been wrong. I looked past the long black curls that didn't so much hide the figure as decorate it, and the face peering around the candle's edge was Jean-Claude's. It took me a second to be sure, because he seemed more delicately beautiful than normal, until I realized that he was wearing makeup. That centuries-old version of it, anyway. Things had been done to soften the line of his face, make his lips more pouting, but the eyes were unchanged, with their black lace of lashes and that drowning deep color. The painting was too large for me to stand next to the fireplace and see it all, but there was something about the eyes of the Cupid figure. I had to move close to see that there were open a mere slit, enough to show the cold blue fire that I'd seen when the hunger was upon Asher. Jean-Claude touched my face, and it made me jump. Damien had moved back, giving us space. Jean-Claude traced the tears on my cheeks. The look in his eyes said clearly that I was crying tears for both of us. He couldn't afford to appear weak in front of Musette, and I couldn't help it. We both turned to Asher, but he was standing as far away as the room would allow. He had turned away, so that all you could see of his face was that golden fall of hair. His shoulders were slightly hunched, as if he'd been struck. Musette came to stand on the other side of Jean-Claude. "Our mistress saw that you are together again as of old, that you would enjoy this little reminder of days gone by." The look I gave her around Jean-Claude's shoulder was not a friendly one. I saw the girl who was her femme de chambre on the other side of the couch. I hadn't even been aware she'd moved away from the fireplace. If the bad guys had wanted to take me out, they could have done it, because I had seen nothing for a few minutes but the painting. "The painting is our guest gift to our host, but we have a more personal gift just for Asha." Angelita moved up beside her like a dark mountain, a much smaller painting in his hands. There were remnants of the paper and twine that had covered it like a discarded skin on the floor. It was half the size of the other, but obviously in the same style, realistic but in glowing colors. Hyper-realistic, very Titian. The only light in the painting was firelight, the glow of the forge. Asher's body was colored gold and crimson with the reflected firelight. He was nude again. The edge of the anvil hid his groin. But the right side of his body was bare to the light. Even his hair was tied back in a loose ponytail so that the right side of his face couldn't be hidden. His arms were still strong as they pretended to forge the blade that lay on the anvil. But the right side of his face, the right side of his chest, his stomach, his thigh, were a melted ruin. These were not the old white scars that I was used to seeing. These were raw, red, discolored, angry lines, like some monster had slashed and gouged at his body. I was suddenly overwhelmed with a memory that was not mine. Asher lying on the floor of the torture room, freed of the silver chains. The men who had tormented him slaughtered around him in an explosion of blood. He reached out to us. His face. His face. I swooned, and Jean-Claude and I fell in a heap on the floor, because I was experiencing directly what he was remembering. Damien and Jason moved up beside us, but Asher stayed well back. I didn't blame him in the least. Chapter 8
Asher,
Come and see your gift, Musette called.
Damien was already on the ground beside me, his hands on my shoulders, fingers digging in. I think he was afraid of what I would do. He should have been. Asher's voice came strained but clear.
I have seen that particular gift before. I know it well.
Do you wish us to return to Belmont and tell her you did not appreciate her gift?
You may tell Belmont that I have gotten exactly what she wished me to get out of her gifts.
And what is that?
I am reminded of what I was, and of what I am.
I got to my feet, Damien still with a death grip on my shoulders. Jean-Claude rose gracefully like a puppet pulled by invisible strings. I would never be that graceful, but tonight it didn't matter. Musette turned back to Jean-Claude.
We have given our gift to Jean-Claude and to Asha. We await our guest gifts.
His voice was empty, so bland it was like listening to silence.
I have told you, Musette, our guest gifts are weeks away from completion.
I am sure you can find something to stand in their stead.
She stared at me.
I found my voice, and it wasn't bland. How dare you come here 3 months early, knowing we won't be prepared to make demands on us?
Damien was clinging to my back a little frantically, but I was polite, for me.
After what she and Belmort had just done, I was downright kind. Your rudeness will not be used as an excuse to force us to do anything we don't want to do.
Damien's arm slid over my shoulders so he was cradling me against his body.
I didn't fight it, because without his presence I think I probably would have struck her. Or shot her.
Which sounded like such a good idea.
Jean-Claude tried to smooth things over, but Musette waved him aside.
Let yourself and talk, if she has something to say.
I opened my mouth to call her a heartless bitch, but it wasn't what came out. Did you believe that gifts worthy of such beauty could be hurried? Would you really take some poor substitute in the place of the magnificence we had commissioned? I stopped talking. All of our men were staring at me except Damien, who was hugging me for all he was worth.
Ventriloquism, Jason said from the other side of Jean-Claude. It's the only answer.
Jean-Claude nodded.
A miracle, indeed. Then he turned to Musette.
All save one pales before your beauty, Musette. How could I offer anything less than something beautiful to grace your loveliness?
Her gaze turned back to me.
Is she not a beauty to equal mine?
I laughed. Damien's arms tightened enough that I had to pat his arm so I could keep breathing comfortably.
Don't worry, I've got this one covered.
I don't think anyone believed me, but I did, honest. Musette, I know I'm pretty. I could admit that. But compared to the otherworldly triplets here, I'm not the most beautiful person on our side.
Triplets, Jason said.
Why do I think I'm not included in that threesome?
Sorry, Jason, but you're like me. We clean up nice. But with these three standing here, we're out of our league.
You include Asha in the three beauties?
Musette said. I nodded. If you're cataloging beautiful people and Asher is in the room, then he always makes the list.
Once, oui, but not now, not for centuries, she said.
I disagree, I said.
You lie.
I looked at her. You're a master vampire. Can't you tell when someone's lying or telling the truth? Can't you feel it in my words? Smell it on my skin? I watched her face, those beautiful but frightening eyes. She couldn't tell if I was lying or not. I'd only met one other master vamp that couldn't tell truth from lie, and that was because she was lying so badly to herself that truth would have gotten in her way. Musette was blind to truth, which meant we could lie through our teeth to her. That had possibilities. She frowned at me and waved it all away with those tiny, well-manicured hands. Enough of this. She was intelligent enough to realize she was losing part of this argument, but she wasn't bright enough to know why, so she was moving on to something she thought she could win.
Even Asha, with his ruined beauty, is more lovely than you are, Anita.
It was my turn to frown at her. I think I already said that. She frowned again. It was like she had been sent with certain lines to say, and I wasn't making the reply she'd expected. I was throwing her performance off, and Musette didn't seem to enjoy improvisation.
It doesn't bother you that you are not more beautiful than the men?
I had to make peace with being the homely one of the group a long time ago. She frowned so hard it looked painful.
You are a very hard woman to insult.
I shrugged as much as I could with Damien's arm still wrapped around me. Truth is truth, Musette. I've broken the cardinal girl rule.
As that would be?
Never date anyone prettier than you are. That made her laugh, a surprised burst of sound.
No, no, the rule is never to admit it.
A smile faded.
You truly have no difficulty with me saying I am more lovely than you?
I shook my head. Nope. She looked completely lost for a moment, until her own human servant touched her shoulder. She shuddered, took a deep shaking breath as if remembering who and what she was, and why she was there. The last sign of laughter faded from her eyes.
You have admitted that your beauty cannot rival mine. Thus taking blood from you would not be a gift worthy of replacing the bubbles that Jean-Claude is having made for me. You are correct also about your wolf. He is charming, but not as charming as the three of them.
I suddenly had a bad feeling about where this was headed.
Damien is somehow yours. I do not understand it, but I can feel it. He is yours the way Angelito is mine and you are Jean-Claude's. As master of the city, Jean-Claude cannot be drink for the taking. But Asher belongs to no one. Give him to me for my guest gift.
He is my second in command, my témoin, Jean-Claude said, still in that empty, means-nothing voice. I would not lightly share him.
I have met some of your other vampires this night. Mon Dieu has an enamel to call. She is more powerful than Asher. Why is she not your second?
She is another's second, and will be going back to him in a few months.
Why is she here, then?
I called her.
Why?
The real reason was that while I was off doing my soul searching, Jean-Claude had needed more backup, but I didn't think he'd share that. He didn't. A master calls home his flock periodically, especially if he thinks they will soon become masters of their own territory. A last visit before he loses the power to call them.
Belle was most perturbed that you rose to master the city. Was that that one last visit, Jean-Claude?
She woke speaking your name, saying that you had struck out on your own. None of us thought that you would ever rise so high. He gave a low, sweeping bow, and she was standing so close that his hair almost brushed her skirt.
It is not often that anyone so surprises Belle Mort.
I am most honored.
Musette frowned. You should be. She was most un abbé.
He stood slowly. Why would my rise to power make her unhappy?
Because to be master of the city is to be beyond the ties of obligation.
Ties of obligation seemed to mean more to the vampires than it did to me, because I felt them go all quiet. Damien was so still around my body that it was like he wasn't there at all. Only the weight of his arms let me know that he was still clinging to me. The beat and pulse of his body was gone, tucked away somewhere deep inside.
But Asher has not risen so high. He could still be called Om, she said.
I glanced at Jean-Claude, but his face was utterly blank, that polite nothingness that meant he was hiding his every reaction.
That is, of course, within her purview. But I would need some notice before Asher was called away. America is less settled than Europe, and fights for territory are much less civilized.
His voice was still empty, emotionless. Nothing mattered.
If my second were to simply vanish, others would see it as a weakness.
Do not worry. Our mistress is not going to call him home, but she admits to being puzzled.
We all waited for her to go on, but Musette seemed content to let the silence stand. Even with Damien hanging on to me, I broke first. Puzzled about what?
Why, Asher left her side, of course.
Asher moved up closer, though still keeping a much greater distance between himself and Musette than the rest of us.
I did not leave her side, he said. Belle Mort had not touched me in centuries. She would not even watch entertainments where I was featured. She said I offended her eye.
It is her prerogative to do with her people as she sees fit, Musette said. True, Asher said. But she bid me to come to America with Yvette as my overseer. Yvette died, and I had no more orders. And if a mistress ordered you home?
Silence. Ours this time. Asher's face was as empty of emotions as Jean-Claude's. Whatever he felt was hidden, but the very blankness of both of their faces said that it did matter, and it was important.
Belmort encourages her people to strike out on their own, Jean-Claude said. It is one of the reasons her bloodline rules more territories than any other, especially here in the United States.
Musette turned those beautiful, pitiless eyes on him.
But Asher did not leave to become master of the city. He left to have revenge on you and your human servant. He wanted to extract payment for his beloved Juliana's death.
See, she had known the name all along.
Yet here your servant stands, strong, well, unharmed. Where is your vengeance, Asher? Where is the price Jean-Claude was to pay for his murder of your servant?
Asher seemed to close in upon himself. So very, very still. I thought if I'd blinked, he'd have vanished altogether. His voice came distant, empty. I found that perhaps I had blamed Jean-Claude in error, that perhaps he too mourned her loss.
So? She snapped her fingers. Like that all your pain, your hatred is forgotten?
Not just like that, no. But I have learned many things that I had forgotten.
Such as the sweet touch of Jean-Claude's body?
She asked. The silence this time was so thick I could hear my blood roaring in my ears. Damien felt like a ghost against my body. All the vampires, I was sure, were wishing themselves away. Either Jean-Claude and Asher had been doing it behind my back, which wasn't impossible, but if not, to answer the question truthfully would be bad. Jason caught my eye, but neither of us dared even shrug. I don't think we were sure what was going on, but that it would end someplace painful was almost certain. Musette swayed around Jean-Claude to stand close to Asher.
Are you and Jean-Claude a happy couple once more? Or,
she looked at me,
is it a happy ménage à trois? Is that why you did not come home?
She pushed past Asher and Jean-Claude, making them move back so she could stand in front of me.
How can the touch of such as this compare to the magnificence of our mistress?
I think she just implied that I wasn't as good in bed as Belmort, but I wasn't entirely sure that's what she'd meant, and I didn't care. She could insult me all she wanted. Insulting me was less painful than so many other things she could be doing.
Belmort is sickened at the sight of me, Asher said finally. She avoids me in all things.
He motioned at the painting that Angelito was still holding up. This is how she sees me, how she will always see me.
Musette swayed her way back to stand in front of Asher. To be least amongst her court is better than ruling anywhere else.
I could not help myself. Are you saying it's better to serve in heaven than rule in hell? She nodded, smiling, seemingly oblivious to the literary allusion.
Oui, précisément. A mistress is the sun, the moon, the all. To be parted from her, only that is true death.
Musette's face was rapturous, glowing with that inner certainty usually reserved for holy rollers and television evangelists. She was, indeed, a true believer. I couldn't see Damien's face, but I was betting it was as carefully blank as the rest. Jason was staring at Musette as if she had sprouted a second head, an ugly, spiky second head. She was a zealot, and zealots are never quite sane. She turned to Asher with that radiance still suffusing her face.
Our mistress does not understand why you left here, Asher.
I did. I think everyone in the room did, except for maybe Angelito and the girl who was still standing on the other side of the couch where Musette had put her.
Look at the painting of me as Vulcan, Musette. See what our mistress thinks of me.
Musette didn't bother to look behind her. She gave that Gallic shrug that meant everything and nothing.
Anita does not see me that way, he said.
Jean-Claude cannot look at you without seeing what was lost, she said.
The time when you could speak for me, Musette, is long past. You do not know my heart or my mind.
You never truly did, Jean-Claude said. She turned to him.
Are you truly telling me that you would touch him as he is now? Be careful how you answer, Jean-Claude. You know that our mistress has seen deep into your heart and mind. You may lie to me, but never to her.
Jean-Claude was quiet for a long time, but finally he told the truth.
We are not currently together in that way. See, you refuse to touch him as she refuses to touch him.
I loosened Damien's arms enough so that I could move more easily. Not exactly, I said. Sorry, but it's my fault that they aren't a couple. She turned to me.
What do you mean, servant?
You know, even if I was like a maid, I know enough about polite society to know that you don't call a maid simply maid. You don't call a servant servant, not unless you truly have never interacted with servants. I folded my arms across my stomach, looking puzzled on purpose. Damien's hand stayed lightly on my shoulders. Is that it, Musette? Are you not an aristocrat after all? Is it all pretend and you simply don't know any better? Jean-Claude gave me a look that she couldn't see.
How dare you, Musette said.
Then prove you are noble. Address me at least like someone who has truly had servants. She opened her mouth to argue, then she seemed to hear something that I couldn't hear. She let out a long breath.
As you like, Blake, then.
Blake is fine, I said. And what I mean is that I'm not entirely comfortable with this bisexual thing. I won't share Jean-Claude with another woman, and definitely not with a man. Musette did that head-to-the-side movement again, as if she'd spied the worm she intended to eat.
Very good, then. Asher has no tie to any of you. He is merely your second.
I looked from one vampire to another. Only Jason looked as confused as I felt. The vamps were acting like a trap had been sprung, and I didn't see it yet. What's going on? I asked. Musette laughed, and it wasn't anywhere near as good a laugh as Jean-Claude or Asher were capable of. It was just a laugh, a vaguely unpleasant one at that.
I am within my rights to ask for him as my gift for tonight, she said.
Wait, I said, and Damien's hands tried to pull me back against him, but I wasn't moving this time. I thought you agreed with Belle that Asher isn't pretty enough to have sex with anymore.
Whoever says anything about sex? Musette asked.
Now I really was puzzled. Why else would you want him for the night? She laughed then, head back, very unladylike, a bray of sound like a hound baying. I hadn't said anything that funny, had I? Jean-Claude's quiet voice came into the silence that followed that laugh.
Musette's interests run to pain more than sex, ma petite.
I looked at him. You don't mean dominance and submission where you have safe words, do you?
There is no word in any language that I have ever heard screamed that would dissuade Musette from her pleasures.
I licked my suddenly dry lips. They lie about that moisturizing lipstick. Your lips still dry out when you get scared. Let me test my understanding. If Asher was your lover or mine or anyone's, then he'd be safe from her?
No, ma petite. Asher would only be safe if he belonged to you or me. Lesser powers cannot protect those they love.
But because we're not doing him, he's free meat? I asked. He seemed to think about that for a long time.
That is accurate enough, oui.
Fuck, I said.
Oui, ma petite, oui.
A thread of tiredness had finally broken through his empty voice. I looked at Asher, and he was hiding behind that shining hair again. What was I supposed to say? That if I hadn't been so squeamish, this wouldn't be happening? I'm sorry I have issues with my boyfriend doing other men. I'm sorry I have issues with me doing other men. Why was I always being made to feel guilty because I wasn't having sex with more people? Wasn't it supposed to be the other way around? Musette held out her hand to Asher. He stood there for a second or two. Then he took her hand. He looked back once at Jean-Claude, a shine of eyes and all that hair. Jean-Claude never reacted, as if he were trying to pretend he wasn't there. I moved forward. Only Damien's fingers digging into my shoulders brought me up short.
We are not letting her do this, I said. She is Musette and Belmort's lieutenant.
Jean-Claude's voice had gone small and distant. Musette did not take him through the drapes into another room. She stopped a few yards away, not even that close to the walls. She turned Asher to face her, and then she drew a knife from her white skirts and plunged it into his stomach before anyone could react. Asher could move faster than the eye could follow, but he made no move to protect himself. He just let her sink the knife home, grinding it until the hilt met his skin, and she couldn't push it in any farther. I had my gun out of the holster, and Jean-Claude grabbed my hand.
"The knife is not silver, ma petite. When it is removed, he will heal almost instantly."
I looked up at him, straining to raise the gun and making some progress. Thanks to his own vampire marks, I was stronger than I should have been. "How do you know it's not silver?"
"Because I have played this game with Musette before."
That made me stop trying to bring the gun up. I went quiet in his hands. Their hands, I should have said, because Damien's hands were plastered to my shoulders. Only Jason hadn't joined in to try to hold me back. From the look on his face, I think he wanted to help me, not hinder me. I looked past Jean-Claude to see Asher still standing. His hands to his stomach, where blood blossomed across the skin of his hands. The brown of the shirt was dark enough to hide the first rush of blood. Musette put the knife to her delicate mouth and licked down the blade. I knew through Jean-Claude's memories that vampire blood gives no sustenance. You cannot feed from the dead, not in that way. Asher looked at us.
"It is not silver, ma chérie. It will not kill me."
His breath was cut off in his throat as Musette plunged the knife in a second time. The world swam in streamers of colors. I closed my eyes for a second and spoke in a low, careful voice.
"Let go of me, Damien."
The hands at my back dropped away instantly, because I'd given a direct order. I opened my eyes and met Jean-Claude's gaze. We stared at each other until his hands dropped away, slowly, away. His voice echoed like a whisper in my mind.
"You cannot kill her for this."
I put my gun back in its holster. "Yeah, I know. I couldn't kill her, because she wasn't trying to kill Asher, but I would not stand here and watch him be tortured. I would not, could not do it. I'd once thought that arm wrestling vampires was a bad idea. She was stronger than me, even with Jean-Claude's marks. But I was also betting that she wasn't trained in hand-to-hand fighting. If I was wrong, I was about to get my ass kicked. If I was right, well, we'd see. Chapter 9. Musette made no move to protect herself. Angelito stayed with the other men across the room. It was as if neither of them saw me as a threat. You'd think with my reputation, vampires would stop underestimating me. But dead or alive, there are always fools. I could feel myself smiling, and I didn't need a mirror to know that it wasn't a nice smile. It was the smile I'd got when I'd been pissed off too much and I'd finally decided to do something about it. Musette made a big show of licking the knife clean, while Lasher stood in front of her and bled. She licked it like a kid with a popsicle on a hot day. Got to lick it carefully, but quickly, or it drips down your hand and you lose some of it. Her eyes were all for me. The show was all for me. It was as if Asher didn't matter at all to her. Maybe he didn't. She had actually turned back to plunge the blade home a third time, when I was within touching distance. I don't know what she thought I planned to do, because she seemed totally surprised when I grabbed her hand. Maybe she expected me to fight like a girl, whatever the hell that means. I pushed my shoulder into her, and she tottered backwards on her high heels. I hooked my heel behind hers, and foot swept her leg out from under her. She fell backwards because I helped. I rode her body down to the ground, turning the knife in her hand with mine, and when she hit the floor, I plunged the knife home. I leaned my knee into the back of our hands and felt the blade come out the back of her body. I whispered to her, "It's not silver. You'll heal." She screamed. I didn't so much hear Angelito move as feel him. "If you come over here, Angelito, I will force this blade up into her heart, and it won't matter if it's silver or if it's not. I'll shred her heart before you can cross the room." The far drapes opened and the vampire spilled into the room. Some ours, some hers. I don't know what would have happened, but I heard the far door open behind the drapes. I heard a lot of movement, and I almost tore the blade up through her. Not at all sure the metal was strong enough to take the strain. With a better blade, I could have dug for a heart. With this one, I wasn't sure. A split second before I tried it, I heard a sound that raised the hair on my arms, the sound of hyenas hunting. is a hell of a lot creepier than the howl of a wolf. But that joined with it. I knew the moment I heard the noises that it was our cavalry coming, not Musette's. I didn't look behind because I didn't dare take my eyes off the vampire I had pinned to the floor. But I felt the crowd surge behind me, felt the neck-ruffling power of shapeshifters filling the room like an electric cloud. The touch of so many of them with such tension called my own beast like a snake in my gut to writhe and flow inside my body. I wasn't a shapeshifter, but through Richard and my tie to the Weir Leopards, I had the closest thing a human being could have to their very own private beast. It was Bobby Lee, who was actually a Weir Rat, that came forward enough for me to see him. His southern drawl always sounded so out of place in a fight. "You planning to kill her?" "I'm thinking about it." He knelt on one knee beside us. "You think that's the smart thing to do?" He glanced up at the vampires on the other side of the room. "Probably not." "Then maybe you should ought to ease up there, before you gut her." "Micah send you?" I asked, eyes still on Musette's pain-filled face. I was happy to see her hurting. I didn't usually enjoy causing pain to anyone, but I just didn't mind hurting Musette. "You didn't send any of your leopards, because you told him not to, but he contacted the other leaders, and here we are. If you're not going to kill her, girl, you should probably let her go." "Not yet," I said. He didn't ask again, but stood up near us, like the good bodyguard he was. I spoke directly to Musette, but I made sure my voice carried. "No one comes into our territory and harms our people. No one. Not the council, not even Lassa de Sang of our bloodline. Everyone tells me that. When I speak to you, I am speaking to Belle herself. Well, here's the message. The next one of her people to harm one of our people is dead. I will take their heads, their hearts, and I will burn the rest." Musette found her voice, at long last, though it was strained and a little afraid. "You would not dare." I leaned into the blade. A little bit more. Made her grunt with the force of it. "Try me." The pain in Musette's face faded, vanishing like someone wiped it away, and her blue eyes began to darken. I rode the knife into her while Belle's pale brown eyes swirled to the surface, the dark overwhelming all that blue, until Musette's eyes were the color of poisoned honey. I'd seen Belle do this trick once before, but it had been in a mirror, and my own eyes. Fear drove through me like a blade, chilling my skin, bringing my heart into my neck like a trapped thing. Fear can either chase back the beast or call it. This fear calmed it, dampened it, so that the rising power sank away, leaving me alone and scared. It wasn't a vampire trick that made me want to let her go and run away. I'd felt Belle move through my own body, and I never wanted her to be able to do that again. If I took Musette's heart with Belle inside her, could I kill them both? Probably not. But God, it was tempting. Belle's voice came without a trace of fear or strain. If the knife hurt her too, it didn't show. "Jean-Claude, have you taught her nothing?" The voice was not Musette's. It was deeper, richer, a low contralto. The irreverent thought that she'd give really good phone sex crossed my mind. Jean-Claude started gliding towards us. He motioned for Damien to follow, and the red-haired vampire fell into step behind him. Jean-Claude came to kneel beside us and motioned Damien to do the same. They both bowed their heads carefully out of reach. "Musette overstepped the bounds for a visitor to my lands. You would not tolerate such treatment of one of your own people. I have learned well the lessons you taught me, Belle Mort." "What lessons is this?" she asked. "Tolerate nothing. No hint of disobedience. No breath of revolution. No insult is tolerated. I admit that I forgot this in the rush of fear that Musette brought with her. The thought of insulting you, even indirectly, was unthinkable, but I am no longer your creature. I am a master of the city now. I am my own creature, and Asher is mine now. I will be what you brought me up to be, Belle. I will truly be your child. I will let Ma Petite be as ruthless as she likes, and Musette will either learn better manners, or she will not be coming home to you ever again." She sat up. With a knife plunged through her body, she sat up. and I could not keep her pinned down. The movement pushed me backwards, enough to brush against Damien. He touched my back, and when I didn't tell him not to, he touched my shoulder. Belle even dropped Musette's hand away from the knife so that my hand held it in place, but she showed no pain. In fact, she ignored me to look at Jean-Claude. I began to feel silly with my bloody hands and the knife still stuck in Musette.
No, not silly. Superfluous.
You know what I would do to you if you harmed her, Belle said.
I know that according to your own laws, the laws you helped to enact, that no one is allowed to simply enter a territory without negotiating safe passage. Musette and her people are here 3 months before we gave them permission to enter, which means, in effect, they are outlaw and have no rights, no safety. I could slaughter them all, and Council Law would be on my side. You have too many people on the Council that fear you, Belle. They would think it a good joke.
You would not dare, she said.
I will not allow you to harm Asher. Not any more.
He is nothing to you, Jean-Claude.
You are the most beautiful thing I have ever seen. Magnificence in your lust. I am humbled by your power, awed by the political maneuvering that you do so effortlessly. But I have been long away from you, and I have learned that beauty is not always what it seems, that lust is not always better than love, that power alone is not enough to fill the bed or the heart, and that I don't have your patience for the politics.
She reached out a slender hand towards him.
I showed you love, such as no mortal ever could.
You showed me lust, mistress, sexual appetite.
Oui, amour,
she said, her voice sultry enough to cause goosebumps on my arms. Jean-Claude shook his head.
No, lust, not love, never love.
A look passed over her face, like a badly designed mask moving liquid under Musette's skin. It reminded me uncomfortably of watching the beast glide under the skin of a shapeshifter before it springs forth. If she changed into Belle completely, I was trying for her heart while I had the chance.
You loved me once, Jean-Claude. Oui, with all my heart and all my soul. But you do not love me now.
Her voice was soft. There might have even been a trace of loss.
I have learned that love can grow without the touch of sex, and that sex does not always lead to love.
I would love you again, she whispered.
No, you would possess me again, and love is not about possession.
You speak in riddles, she said.
I speak truth as I have come to know it, he said.
Those pale honey-brown eyes turned to me.
You have done this. Somehow you have done this.
I was beginning to feel positively silly with the knife still in Musette, but I was afraid to take it out, because I was half expecting Belle to stand up and say, Aha! That's what I was waiting for. So I kept the blade in and tried to think what to do. Staring into those pale brown eyes, it was hard to think, hard not to either run away or try and kill her. If I can't run away from my fears, I have a tendency to try and kill them. It's a strategy that's worked so far. What have I done? I asked, and my voice showed the strain. Damien's hands kneaded gently at my shoulders, not so much a massage as a reassurance that he was there, I think.
You have turned him against me, she said.
No, I said. You did that all on your own, centuries before I was born. That liquid mask moved under Musette's skin again. If I touched her face, I thought I'd feel things underneath that should not have been there.
I took him to my bed. What more does anyone desire of Belmont?
You showed him what your love was worth when you cast Asher out of your bed.
What does Asher's fate have to do with Jean-Claude's love?
That anyone who knew the two of them could ask that was amazing. That the vampire that brought them together could ask that was both frightening and sad. You need to leave now, Belle, I said.
Why, what have I said to upset you?
I shook my head. The list is too long, Belle. We don't have all night. Let me hit the highlights. Go away for now, please. Just leave. I'm tired of trying to explain color to the blind.
I do not understand what that means.
No, I said, you don't. She stared up at me. Her hand came up as if to touch my face. If you touch me, I said, I'll see if Musette can survive without her heart.
Why is the touch of my hand worse than the touch of our bodies, one against the other?
Call it a hunch, but I don't want you touching me on purpose. Besides, it's not your body, it's Musette's. Although I'm not sure about that. So call me cautious, and just don't touch me.
I will see you again, Aniza. I promise you that.
Yeah, I know.
You don't seem to believe me.
Oh, I believe you. I just can't get too worked up over it.
Worked up?
She made it a question. She means she cannot get too upset about your threat, Jean-Claude said. Belle looked back at me.
Why can you not?
I've had a lot of vampires threaten me. I can't panic every time.
I am Belle Mort, member of the Council on High. Do not underestimate me, Anita.
Tell that to the Earth Mover, I said. He'd been a council member that had come to town once upon a time. He died.
I have not forgotten that Jean-Claude slew a council member.
Actually, I'd slain him, but why quibble? Just go, Belle. Please, just go.
And if I choose to stay, what will you do? What can you do?
I thought about several options, most of them fatal to one or both of us. Finally, I said, if you want to keep this body, fine. It's not my body. It's not even my vampire. You want it? Knock yourself out. I leaned back from her and jerked the knife out. There was no way I was leaving a weapon on Musette. She was too likely to take the blade out and stick it in me. The blade pulling out brought a gasp from Belle that plunging it in hadn't. She grabbed my wrist, as if to keep me from hurting her. But I should have known better. Some small, screaming part of me knew I was still kneeling on the carpet in Jean-Claude's living room, but the rest of me was in a dark, candlelit room. The bed was large and soft, mounded with pillows as if it would rise up in a soft, cushioned wave and engulf me. The woman pressed into all that softness lay in a bed of her own dark hair, her eyes a solid golden brown fire, like staring at the sun through a piece of colored glass. Belle Mort stared up at me, her pale body naked, the glory of her spread before me, nothing hidden. I wanted her as I'd never wanted anything else in my life. I came back to myself with a gasp. Jean-Claude held my other hand in a death grip. Damien was a weight against the back of my body. Jason stood over the rest of us as we knelt. His hands were on Jean-Claude's shoulder and against the side of my neck, above Damien's hand. I could feel the pulse in my neck pounding against the pulse in the palm of Jason's hand. I could smell the musty scent of fur, the rich, almost edible smell of the forest. It was the smell of the pack. The werewolves that had come to guard our back had stepped up through the crowd. I could feel the wolves ranged behind me. Feel them like there was an invisible thread between Jason, me, and them. Jean-Claude's ties to the wolves were direct. They were his animal to call. He didn't need Richard's beast to call the wolves. I needed a surrogate wolf to bind me to them. Richard should have been at our back, but he wasn't. If Jason had not been there to be our third, then Belle might have raised the ardour, drowned us in memories of her sweet flesh, flung us out into the room and turned my Mexican standoff into an orgy. But Jean-Claude gave me his control through the press of his hand. Damien gave me his desperate reserve through his body molded against my back. Jason fed the pulse of the pack into the bend of my neck. We were not merely a triumvirate of power. Through Damien's addition, we were more. And that more was stronger than Belle Mort trapped in Musette's body. If she'd been here in person, it might have been a different story, but she wasn't. She was way the hell over in Europe somewhere. A howl broke out behind me, and another, and another. Jason threw his head back, making a long, clean line of his throat. A howl trembled from his mouth, to join with the chorus behind us. The sound rose and fell, one wolf's note dying off, another taking up the call, until the sound rose and fell like music. Lonely, trembling, amazing music. I met Belle's pale brown eyes and found them full of fire, like staring at flames through brown glass. It did remind me of her eyes in the memory she had chosen, but it was just a memory. There was no bite or pull to it now. The ardor lay quiet, held behind the bars we had forged for it, from the sheer force of will and months of practice. The last time you rolled the ardor over us, it was new to me. It's not new anymore, I said. Something flowed under Musette's skin. It was like watching a second face roll underneath her skin. Again, I half expected Belle to burst out through Musette's body like some kind of shapeshifter, but the rolling shape stopped, and those dark fire eyes stared into mine.
There will be other nights, Anita, she said in that low, almost purring voice of hers.
I nodded. I know. With that, she vanished. Musette fell back onto the floor, into a dead faint. Her vampires rushed forward. The wolves stayed at my back. The weir hyenas stepped up. The weir rats drew guns, and Bobby Lee said, "Don't queer our shot, gentlemen." The weir hyenas hesitated, forming two groups, one to either side of the vampires. Our vampires peeled off from Musette's and eased through the crowd of weir animals.
"Nobody moves, nobody gets hurt," Bobby Lee said.
"Let them fetch their mistress," Jean-Claude said.
Some of the shapeshifters looked his way. None of the weir rats did. We had this much backup not because Jean-Claude had a tie to any other animal except the wolves, but because I'd made friends. The weir rats and weir hyenas were here for me, not him.
"Ease down, Bobby Lee. Let them get Musette. I certainly don't want to have to take care of her."
The men and women, weir rats all, with their guns nicely pointed, moved back in two lines so the vampires had to walk between them to reach Musette. Angelito had joined them, but Bobby Lee motioned him back with a wave of his gun barrel. Angelito was imposing, but he was also one of the few humans among them. I wasn't sure the big man was the most dangerous person on their side. A little girl of 7 or 8, with dark curls cut short around an angelic face, flashed dainty fangs and hissed at me. An older boy who looked like a young 12 or an old 10 picked Musette's shoulders up, raising her limp figure off the ground as if she weighed nothing. He didn't flash fangs, he just looked at me with dark, unfriendly eyes. A male vamp in a dark conservative suit got Musette's feet, though he made no move to take the small woman from the boy. I knew the male vamp could have carried her easily, but he didn't argue with the boy. The boy didn't lack strength, just height and leverage. They carried her back to Angelito, who took her from the others. Musette looked tiny, held in his long arms. There were people in the room who had thicker arms than Angelito. The weir hyenas were bodybuilders, but there was no one on our side that had the length and size of Musette's little angel. Jean-Claude stood, drawing me to my feet. Damien moved as I moved. Jason, too.
"We have rooms prepared for all of you. You will be escorted to them. Then we will leave guards outside your doors for the protection of all concerned."
Bobby Lee was still holding his gun nice and steady on the vamps. "Anita?" He made my name a question. "I don't want them wandering around without guards on them, so yeah, sounds like a good idea to me. You guys able to stick around that long?"
"Honey child, I would follow you to the ends of the earth."
"Of course we can." He laid the southern accent on thick enough to walk across. "Thanks, Bobby."
"Our pleasure."
"Ming Dai, Faust, you know the way to the room. Show our guards where to go." Ming Dai was lovely, delicate, with perfectly straight black hair, cut just above her shoulders. Her skin was like pale porcelain. She would have looked like a perfect China doll if she hadn't liked wearing skin-tight black leather most of the time. The leather sort of ruined the image. She was a master vampire, and her animal to call, I had been surprised to learn, was the wolf. Strangely, this didn't make her any more attractive to the wolves or me. She was just too damn unfriendly. Faust was not much taller than Meng Dai, but he didn't make you think delicate, just short. He was cheerfully attractive, like the boy next door if he happened to be a vampire, and had dyed his hair a dark wine burgundy. His eyes were the color of new pennies, as if the brown had a touch of fresh blood in it. He was a master vampire, but not strong enough to ever be master of the city, or at least not hold on to it. A weak master of the city is usually a dead one. Ming Dai and Faust led the way through the drapes in the far corridor beyond. Musette's vamps went next. The weir rats and the weir hyenas brought up the rear. The drapes swished closed behind them. We were left alone with our thoughts. I hoped everyone else's thoughts were more useful than mine, because all I could think of was that Belle wouldn't like being given her hat and shown the door.
She'd find a way to make us eat the insult, if she could. Maybe she couldn't, but she was over 2,000 years old, according to Jean-Claude. You didn't survive that long without knowing things, things that would make your enemies run screaming. The council member we'd killed had been able to cause earthquakes simply by thinking about it. I was pretty sure Belle had her own special tricks. I just hadn't seen them yet. Chapter 10. Less than an hour later, Jean-Claude and I were in his room alone. Damien was one of the guards outside our door. We'd split our vamps up among the weir animals so that, hopefully, the bad vampires couldn't use mind tricks on the weir animals without the vamps knowing it. We'd done the best we could do, which had actually been pretty damn good. The ardor was still in hiding. I wasn't questioning it, just grateful. Jean-Claude's large four-poster bed was draped in blue silk, mounted with pillows in at least three vibrant shades of blue. He traded the drapes and pillows to match whatever color the sheets were, so I knew without looking the sheets would be blue silk. Jean-Claude did not do white sheets, no matter what they were made out of. He was sitting in the room's only chair, slumped down, hands crossed over his stomach. I was sitting on the rug that he'd put beside the bed. The rug was actually fur, thick and soft, and somehow, just by touch, you knew it had once been alive. We'd both been strangely reluctant to go to bed. I think we were both afraid the ardor would rise, and we weren't ready for it yet. "Let me test my understanding," I said. Jean-Claude looked at me, moving only his eyes. "Tomorrow night, if Asher is still nobody's, will they be within their rights to ask for him?"
"Not as they did tonight, no. You have made that impossible now, unless they can take him by force."
I shook my head. "I've been around enough vamp politics to know that if you stop them from doing one thing, they'll do something else. Not because they want to, but because it will cause you pain." He frowned at me. I sighed. "Let me try that again. Here's the deal. What are they within their rights to ask from us while they're here?"
"Hunting rights, or willing donors. Lovers, the basic needs to be met."
"Sex is a basic need?" He just looked at me. Sorry. "So I understand the willing donor part, they've got to eat. But the lovers, what does that mean exactly?"
"It would be déclassé to demand lovers for the servants, so Musette's lady's maid and butler are not to be worried over. The two children are special cases. The girl is physically too young, she does not think of such things. The boy is a problem. Bartolome was precocious, which is why Belle sent Musette to take him."
I stared at him. "Please tell me that Musette never had sex with a kid." He seemed suddenly tired, rubbing his eyes with his fingertips.
"Do you wish the truth or a more pleasant lie?"
"The truth, I guess."
"Belmort can smell sexual appetite. It is one of her gifts. Bartolome may look like a child, but he does not think like one. Nor did he when he was human and truly a boy of 11 going on 12. He was the heir to a great fortune. Belle wanted to control that fortune. He was also notorious in an age where noble sons were allowed almost any indiscretion with women who were not of noble blood."
"Explain that," I said.
"He looked like a child, Anita, and he would use that innocent face to maneuver women into compromising situations. By the time they realized that they were in danger of abuse, it was often too late. More than that, he threatened to accuse them of being the aggressor. There was no such phrase as child molestation in that century, but everyone knew it happened. Children were often married as young as 10 or 11, so the people who had such tastes could satisfy their needs within the marriage bed. Until their spouses became too old for their tastes, then they would look outside their marriage, or by that time their own children might be old enough."
I stared at him. "I don't think I wanted to know that last part. That is beyond disgusting."
"Oui, ma petite, but it is still true. A fortune as large as Bartolome's would normally be Belle's task. She would never leave such monies or lands or titles to anyone else. But she is not a lover of children, no matter how grown up they may be. So she cast it to Musette, who, as you now realize, will do anything our mistress bids her do."
I got that impression.
"So yes, she seduced or allowed herself to be seduced by the boy. Belle gave her a touch of the ardor, and Bartolome was enraptured. Belle did not mean to bring him over to us as a boy. She meant to wait until he grew older, but Bartolome was thrown from his horse. He had crushed his skull and was dying. His next brother was only 5, and Belle would have no hold on him.